With the Lord's help tonight, we'll go on with our Bible survey in the Chronicles. Last week, I'll just review very briefly, it was kind of an introductory time together around the books of the Chronicles. Of course, they're originally one book, probably compiled by Ezra. As you read the first book and second book of Chronicles, you will realize that much of what the compiler has to say is repeated. He takes his genealogies from Moses, and he goes through the time of the kings and the time of 1 and 2 Samuel, and he repeats so much information. Why is he doing that? Why is he repeating that? Why the genealogies? Why? We would look back and sometimes wonder, 9 chapters of genealogies. Why does he do that? Well, he had a very, very important reason in doing that. First and Second Chronicles are written from the standpoint of restoring the religious heritage to the people of God. And in that, while trying to restore their godly roots, while trying to restore their religious heritage, he had to tell them where they came from, literally. And I'm going to throw a bunch of numbers at you for a minute. And it's all for a point. But here's some numbers. King David's reign started 1,100 years before Christ. Ballpark numbers. His reign started 1,100 years before Christ. So, he reigned 40 years. Solomon started reigning then, 40 years later, 970 years before Christ. The numbers are going down because we're getting closer to Christ. 970 years before Christ, Solomon reigned. And the reign of King Solomon and his father, King David, this was the pinnacle of the nation of Israel. This is the glory days. And really, I mark that at the midpoint of Solomon's reign. Because the first 20 years of his reign, he'd been building his house, building the temple. 7 years building the temple, 13 years building his house. 20 years of building, Queen of Sheba comes and says, "This takes my breath away." Wow. And then Solomon started turning his heart away from God by way of promoting the gods of his many wives. And the kingdom immediately began to go down, and go down fast. So we by 930 BC, the kingdom divides. After the death of Solomon, the kingdom splits. The 10 northern tribes called Israel, the 2 southern tribes called Judah. That's at 930 BC, 930 years before Christ. After a period of several kings, more bad than good, more ungodly than godly, Israel goes into captivity, and that's God's woodshed. And when I mean Israel, I mean the 10 northern tribes. 136 years later, Judah goes into captivity, and that's God's woodshed. They held out just a little longer, but they were going the same direction as Israel. And they both ended up into captivity. The last of Judah was taken into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar. We'll read more about that when we get up into Daniel. We'll consider that more when we get up there. So we are then at a point that by basically 600 BC, the whole outfit is in captivity. 300 years from the glorious pinnacle of the kingdom, they've been conquered and they're in Gentile captivity within 300 years. Okay? Our nation's about 250 years old. That's about the ballpark time frame of our nation. That's a short amount of time. I mean, it doesn't sound like it, but it in the scheme of things, that's a short amount of time. So we then have, by 530 B.C., they're coming home. Now, Ezra, the next book, will fill in for us a little bit more about why they're coming home. Ezra will fill in some of the details around the Lord working on the hearts of the king of Persia to let them go back to Jerusalem and start building the temple. We'll deal with that when we get to Ezra, Lord willing. So we are, with the downward spiral and with the captivity and all that's going on, think about this. We are 420 years beyond the glory time of Israel. We're 420 years beyond that. Not only that 420 years has been removed. We know in our country how far we've moved from the founder's vision in 250 years. We know, not even, but we know how far we moved in that short space of time. And now Israel has been double that almost, away from the glory days of David and Solomon. And so you can imagine how far they've moved from where they started. Not only that, you throw onto the pile the fact that they'd been in bondage 70 years. Okay? They've been in a Gentile, under Gentile control and bondage, ripped out of their country, ripped out of their homes, relatives severed, genealogies lost, connections lost, even their understanding of their roots to a great extent, lost. Because they've been in bondage for 70 years. There are 400 plus years since anybody heard of King David, King Solomon. And to even make it way more mind-boggling than that, when you consider and go back to Genesis chapter 12 and say, God came to Abraham at about this time, and it took almost 1,000 years before they saw the fruition of that promise that I'll make you a great nation. And then the 500-year decline after that, you're 1,500 years, you're 1,500 years since the promise was given to Abraham. These people, coming out of captivity, would have been, to a great extent, a blank slate as it relates to their religious heritage. Would have been a blank slate as it relates to their lineage. Ezra, compiling the chronicles, if Ezra indeed is the author and compiler, Ezra is led of the Lord, or whoever's the author is led of the Lord, to reestablish who they are. You're coming home. They're going home to a place they didn't live. These people were probably born in captivity and going to a place they've only heard of. But they're going home. They heard about Grandpa telling about Jerusalem. They'd never been there. And so Ezra has the daunting task of reestablishing who they are, where they came from, what God is doing. We know that that's a part of the genealogies. We read 1 Chronicles. Nobody volunteered to read all the genealogies last week, by the way. We read 1 Chronicles 9:1-2. So all Israel were reckoned by genealogies, and behold, they were written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah, who were carried away to Babylon for their transgressions. God had taken them to the Babylonian woodshed. Now, the first inhabitants that dwell in their possessions, in their cities, were, and he goes on and he begins to outline who started settling first. Now, this, I believe, will unfold as we go through, especially the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, that they came back in waves. There were really three waves. There were actually, if you get down to it, it seemed like there are three waves of them being taken into captivity. And then there will be, it will seem like three waves as they come back and they begin to resettle. And the first nine chapters of the book of Chronicles reestablishes their genealogy, reestablishes who they are. Those living links back to their roots, reestablishing their religious heritage and what God is doing. And then the whole rest of 1 Chronicles, from chapter 10 to chapter 29, the entire rest of the book after the genealogies is focused upon King David and focused upon the glory days of King David. The chronicler does not put in the chronicles the indiscretions of King David. Doesn't talk about Bathsheba, Uriah. He focuses on what God was doing through David. He focuses upon God carrying out his promise of making Israel a great nation through David, and how that they were that under David. It focuses on the godliness of David. It's not a contrary, remember, it's not a contradicting book. It's not a contrary view. It is merely a synoptic view. In other words, it's looking at the same object from a different angle and seeing the emphasis. Because what he's trying to do is reestablish their religious heritage and their religious roots. And Samuel well enough disclosed to us David's imperfections. The kings disclosed to us the political nightmare of the kingdom of those days. Chronicles is set out for the purpose of reestablishing a godly system. As they go back to Jerusalem, the first thing that they're instructed to do and the first thing that they do is reestablish the temple. Rebuild the temple. And reestablish the priesthood. Not the throne. The throne, as Israel has known it, is done. That's not going to be their system. What you also notice is that as they go back in and as they reestablish and as they go towards rebuilding the temple, that even 2 Chronicles is dealing primarily with the life of Solomon, David's son, and that he also is viewed in a very positive light. Not strictly, but primarily in a positive light. 2 Chronicles will deal with Solomon, and then later than the kings of Judah, the latter half of the book, the kings of Judah only. Because while in captivity, Israel as a nation, remember, Israel as the 10 northern tribes, ceases. Judah carries on, carries through, but they go back in and they're not the divided country that they once were. So while the chronicler is reestablishing their biblical roots by way of genealogy, by way of David's rule, by way of Solomon's rule, by way of the kings of Judah, He says something in 1 Chronicles 17. He reminds them of something in 1 Chronicles 17 that's key to the whole establishment of who they are. He tells them here in 1 Chronicles 17 what God's been doing and what God has promised. And as we kind of pick it up in the middle of this a little bit. Now, it came to pass as David sat in his house that David said to Nathan the prophet, "Lo, I dwell in a house of cedars, but the ark of the covenant of the Lord remaineth under curtains." Now, what David said is that I'm dwelling in a magnificent house. The ark of the Lord, the presence, the thing that represented the presence of the Lord, dwells in under tents, under curtains. What's he talking about? The tabernacle. The tabernacle, from the outward perspective, was a homely looking thing. There was very little ornate about the outside of the tabernacle. The inside didn't have a whole lot of ornateness to it, but at any rate, David said, I'm dwelling in this fantastic mansion, and the ark of the Lord is under curtains. And God impressed upon David, I want to build a house for God. Nathan, verse 2, chapter 17, Nathan said unto David, do all that is in thine heart, for God is with thee. And it came to pass the same night that the word of God came to Nathan, saying, go and tell David my servant, thus saith the Lord, thou shalt not build me an house to dwell in, for I have not dwelt in a house since the day that I brought up Israel unto this day. But I have gone from tent to tent and from one tabernacle to another. Wheresoever I have walked with it, all Israel, spake I a word to only of the judges of Israel, whom I commanded to feed my people, saying, why have ye not built me a house of cedars? Now therefore thus shalt thou say unto my servant David, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I took thee from the sheepcote, even from following the sheep, that thou shouldst be ruler over my people Israel. And I have been with thee whithersoever thou hast walked, and have cut off all thine enemies from before thee, and have made thee a name like the name of the great men that are in the earth. Also I will ordain a place for my people Israel, and will plant them, and they shall dwell in their place, and shall be moved no more. Neither shall the children of wickedness waste them any more, as at the beginning. And since the time that I commanded judges to be over my people Israel, moreover, I will subdue all thine enemies. Furthermore, I tell thee that the Lord will build thee an house. And it shall come to pass that when thy days be expired, that thou must go to be with thy fathers, that I will raise up thy seed after thee, which shall be of thy sons, and will establish his kingdom. He shall build me an house, and I will establish his throne forever. I will be his father, and he shall be my son. And I will not take my mercy away from him, as I took it from him that was before thee. But I will settle him in mine house and in my kingdom forever, and his throne shall be established forevermore. So David has received orders of the Lord. Don't build me a house. And of course, Samuel fills in the pieces as to why that is. The sword has never departed your house, David. And Samuel fills in the pieces as to why that happened, because of the sin with Uriah. So you're not to build me a house, David, but The seed that will come from you will build me a house. Solomon. Solomon will build me a house, and I will establish it and establish that throne forever. You say the throne. I just got done telling you the throne ended. After captivity, the time of the kings is no more. Ah, but this is prophetic, looking more towards the throne of Christ. For David is in the direct lineage of King Jesus. In Matthew chapter 1, looking at Jesus as king doesn't waste one word until he, well, he doesn't waste any word, but what I'm saying is the very first thing that Matthew says, here's the lineage of King Jesus right through David. And you can read Matthew 1 and see that. He doesn't talk about anything else until he establishes that King Jesus is right in the direct line of descendants through King David. And that'll be a fulfillment of this prophecy to its completeness. And then very literally, a part of the fulfillment of that prophecy, a very immediate part of that, is that Solomon's going to be on the throne, Solomon's going to build God a house, and all of that came to pass. And so the temple was built. The splendor of the kingdom is amazing. And the Bible goes on in 2 Chronicles, as I said, talks about Solomon's rule, talks about the kings of Judah. And then that is the end of the book of the Chronicles. That's what he set out to do. Reestablish who they were. Give them a history book. You can really imagine that. I'm learning a little bit more of our own history as a nation. Just little nuggets here and there. And it's amazing how much history we've lost in a couple hundred years. It's amazing what we've forgotten about as a people as it relates to our founders. And these folks are twice that many years removed from David and Solomon, and three or four times that many years removed from the time of Abraham when these promises were originally established. And so this is all very new to them, other than what they would have picked up from their ancestors, other than what they would picked up from whoever they were allowed to stay in contact with. But who knows how much that was, being in the Babylonian captivity. I mean, I don't think it was a day in the park. So they've had now, by the Chronicles, they've been reestablished in who they are and where they came from. They've been reestablished in what God is doing and what God has done. And they've been directed to and headed in the direction of reestablishing the temple and the priesthood and proper worship. And once that is established, once proper worship is established, once a proper relationship with the God of the universe is established, in this case reestablished, all of the other pieces of the puzzle will fall right together. They could come out of bondage and set up another throne and put somebody on that throne, make him king. And if their relationship with the Lord is not what it should be, how long will that last? Not very. If proper religion, the service, defining religion as the service that we give to our Lord, if that's not reestablished by way of reestablishing the priesthood, how long will the society last? Take away all morality from a society And you'll see how long it lasts. It's anarchy. And so all of these things now have, by the compiler of the Chronicles, probably Ezra, are going in the direction of being reestablished, and they are going into the homeland. They're going back home. And they're going to rebuild that temple. And Lord willing, we'll get into then what Ezra has to say about some of the backdrop as to how that happened. And some of the interesting little forces and even local politics that goes on into why the Persian king, see, the Persian king whooped up on the Babylonian king there, and now the Persian king's in control. And he lets them all go back to the homeland. And we'll see how and why God, well, the ultimate is that God moved upon his heart and said, why don't you folks go back home? They're still under my thumb, right? They're still under my authority, which is another reason why the kingdom of Israel wasn't reestablished, right? But he let them go back home nonetheless. He let them rebuild the temple nonetheless. Reestablishing worship of God the way they saw fit. And this Gentile king helped them. How amazing is God? He turns the heart of any king. He can move upon the heart of any person. A person of great stature in society, or a person of no stature in society. Sovereign God can get hold of his heart and turn that heart and say, I want you to do that. And all of a sudden, he's doing that. He's doing what God's leading him to do. And he led him to let the children of Israel go. And as we study Ezra, Lord willing, starting next week, that will begin to unfold for us. May God help us to really consider every book of the Bible has an importance. Every book of the Bible, every word of the Bible is there for a reason. And the genealogies aren't there just to take up space, but they're there for a very distinct reason. And the more we study it, the more we understand it, the more I think that we'll hunger and thirst for it. Let us be dismissed in prayer, Brother Keith. Will you dismiss us?